Good afternoon, everybody. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me today is...
Scotty Hertz, fresh in from the dentist, so if I'm slurring my words, I haven't been drinking. I'm still a little bit frozen.
Scotty goes to the dentist.
Yes. I'm writing a children's novel as we speak. Dental plan. Scotty needs freezing.
I think you're mixing up the pop culture references.
Oh, definitely. That's my MO, man.
Good. It bodes well for the rest of the show.
Yes, I hope so.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean or through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Today we're going to dig into the first few weeks of the Alberta provincial election. It seems like Jason Kenney's to lose, and he's doing everything he can to sink his own campaign. Well, not just him. But is there a chance for the NDP? And then we will check in with Brexit, which was supposed to happen this Friday, but is not going to. Nobody has any idea about what is going to happen or when it's going to happen, and we'll catch up on that latest drama. And then finally, Israel is also having an election, and Benjamin Netanyahu seems to be getting some electoral help he might desperately need from one Donald Trump. We look at the odds for our old friend BB. But first, it finally happened, and it was a Friday evening. The event everyone was waiting for, and we don't mean the new Jordan Peele movie. Da-dun-dun. Actually, that was well timed.
Right on the money there. Right on the button, as we say in the biz.
We're precariously close to being radio pros.
Yeah. It's our new business card. Say that, yeah.
precariously close to being new.
Knowing what they're doing.
Speaking of Donald Trump, the Mueller report was delivered. It wasn't delivered to the public. It was delivered to the Department of Justice. And then within 48 hours, summarized by the current Attorney General, William Barr. We should preface this by saying... we're pre-recording kind of early this week, so there may have been news in the last 24 to 48 hours, but as of our recording right this minute, the only thing we have gotten from the Mueller report itself is four semi-quoted lines in Bill Bard's four-page summary.
The teaser, if you will.
Ooh, I do like that.
Yeah. One Democrat put it that we haven't seen the Mueller report, we've just seen the Barr report, which is a cribbed report on the Mueller report. So it's
more or less accurate, yeah.
You probably heard and possibly saw Trump talking about his total exoneration, I've been completely, then I didn't do it. He's the I didn't do it kid all of a sudden. So you can get a Simpsons reference in all four topics. I don't know, yeah. So... The gist of the letter was that obviously obstruction of justice wasn't proven, so it's not really total exoneration. It's just that it can't be proven, which is a different thing. Actually, in the UK, that can be a verdict. There's like innocent, guilty, and not proven.
I think the exact line was, while this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it does not exonerate him either. Oh. So it's like a situation where... When you go to court, and it's important to keep in mind that there's a legal threshold and then there's a political threshold. So the legal threshold, of course, is proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's it's a phrase we use a lot. We've heard a lot. We've all seen Law and Order. But it's an exceptionally high threshold to throw somebody in prison or to, fine them or whatever for beyond a reasonable doubt. So what it says is that there's this murky area here where there's some highly suggestive things, but not necessarily indictable things.
Trump also called it the illegal takedown that failed, which is... It hasn't...
He has a way with words.
Yeah, it hasn't... He just started spouting. He got off the plane there and he's like, it's a witch hunt. It's a hoax. And it's so terrible I had to go through it, which is my favorite line. It's like, it's terrible that your president had to go through this. Yeah, there's no smoking gun, but there's probably like a Glock in the nightstand, and it's got some fingerprints on it. A lot of people went down. A lot of people spiraled down due to this. In the course of the investigation, 34 indictments, including a pile of Russians. I think it was at least 25.
Mm-hmm.
A lot were wanted on conspiracy to commit crimes, identity theft, money laundering. Like, there's definitely a whiff of Russians. More than half of the people that were indicted
mm-hmm.
were Russians.
Mm-hmm.
What was that guy's name? Kilnink? The guy that worked with Manafort.
Yeah.
He was actually a spy that he worked with Manafort right. in Kiev. He was wanted in obstruction. We had Roger Stone pleading not guilty.
Yeah, his
lying
trials
to
in
Congress.
November.
Yeah. Also obstruction and Manafort himself. What was it? Bank fraud, tax fraud,
yeah.
and obstruction. So even though obstruction wasn't proven directly to Trump,
right.
what did they call him? Guy number one.
Person
of interest number one.
Right. No, I know what you mean. Individual one.
Individual
yeah.
one.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks like individuals 2 through 35 were definitely some pretty sketchy characters. There was like 500 witnesses called. Requests put out to foreign governments for evidence, and it was 230-odd orders for communication. So that's like, give us the emails or give us the phone records or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty in-depth. It's like, it's been 2 years. We've probably talked about this. 22 months this whole thing took?
Yeah, it's been almost
but now of
2 years since, Comey was fired in May 2017, I want to say. So
that sounds right. Yeah.
It's been almost 2 full years. And remember, the special counsel investigation didn't start the day after the Comey was fired, but an FBI counterintelligence investigation was. And yeah. that got folded into the special counsel investigation.
So now Trump is saying that he wants to investigate the investigators. We need to go after these people.
Well, not just Trump. Lindsey Graham has said they need an investigation.
Yeah, who he was golfing counsel. With on the weekend, right? So over golf.
Which was Kid Rock, by the way, in American flag pants.
Ah. Anyway, so over golf, they decided. I don't know. Whether that will actually happen, I mean, if you're claiming that you were totally exonerated or
right.
whatever, why are you so worried if you want to go after these people that have essentially come up with nothing? The worry comes from the if and when, it's probably when, although it's going to be difficult to get,
mm-hmm.
is to get the full Mueller investigation out there. And it mm-hmm. sounds like there's lots of legal hoops will need to be jumped through to get it out. But, I mean, even some Republicans, who was on, did I see Ted Cruz? The bearded Cruz?
The bearded Cruz?
He's got a beard. It actually sort of suits him. I can't believe I'm saying that. He looked very statesmanlike. He said, yeah, we need full transparency or something like that on this. So
well, I mean, that's...
But of course, he was attacked by Trump, as with everybody else.
It's a popular turn of phrase, but of course, Mitch McConnell has blocked that resolution that was passed 420-0 to make the Mueller report public in the House. Mitch McConnell's blocked that from going forward in the Senate.
In the Senate, yep.
They have asked for the report to be delivered by April 2nd. They've asked both Barr and I think Mueller to try to deliver that to the House. That's the thing that has seemed to be missing in all of this. Number one is, if it's a complete and total exoneration, why not just release the report?
Mm.
And I understand that there's aspects of the grand jury that have to be kept secret. That is part of policy when you're talking about grand juries, is that there's things that they have access to that do not end up going to the general public. That's fine. There may be sources and methods in terms of some of the intelligence gathering that has to be protected. I think most people would understand that if there was some redaction to that end. But where is the report? And if it's a clean sweep for Trump, if he's completely and utterly exonerated,
he's
like he says,
best of time.
Then just see the dang report. And then the other part of this is William Barr, who we don't know where his allegiances lie. He auditioned for the Trump administration last summer. He wrote a 19-page memo, unsolicited, basically saying that Bob Mueller was overreaching, that he had too much power, that the president is allowed to do what he pleases under executive power, and then he comes before the Senate for his confirmation hearing, and he talks about how Bob Mueller is his friend, and he respects Bob Mueller, and he thinks his special counsel investigation should continue. So what side of Bill Barr are we to believe?
The opportunist side, probably. Who's that guy? Get that guy. I like what he's saying. Well, he's, bring him in.
Yeah, he sold us an old school Republican, not necessarily Trump acolyte. But he auditioned for this like any Trump acolyte did, like Matthew Whitaker did, by writing op-eds and going on CNN and saying, hey, Donald Trump, here, look how cool I am. I'm defending you on TV. It's just, you know, again, if there's nothing to fear, first of all, if there was no crime, no anything, what was everybody lying about? Which I think is the primary question that we should be asking any and all Republican politician who's taking a victory lap now. Well, what was with all the lying if there's nothing to lie about? And then on top of it all, if there's nothing to come out of this, just release the report.
Because that is the other big charge that came out of this for was it Papadopoulos, Flynn, mm-hmm. lying mm-hmm. to the FBI, mm-hmm. Van der Zwan also?
Mm-hmm.
Like, name all the names that probably won't mean anything. Well, until the report, you know, the full report comes out, we get the people chipping away at it to look for intel and info. But the it sounds like what might actually trip Trump up in the meantime is, what is it, the Southern District of New York?
Right. There was a whole host of things that the special counsel team looked into that were then farmed into other appropriate areas, like the Southern District of New York. The U.S. attorneys are all split into various areas in the Southern District.
It's a
of New
very
York
interesting school. Arrangement.
Of course, where
to
Trump Tower is located in Southern Manhattan. But I mean, yeah, there's investigations going on all over the place. We seem to think that Mueller is the end of investigations. No, but there's congressional investigations, there's investigations through the New York District Attorney Department, the State Attorney General's office is investigating too. Pretty much everything Donald Trump has touched, his campaign, his administration, his businesses, his charities.
The Wakes.
Pretty much the only thing they're not looking at is The Apprentice. It's everything else, though,
for clues
is under,
to what happened.
Everything else, though, is under investigation.
Yeah, his business is directly, and also the inauguration committee. There was some sketchy donations that they're
well, there were sketchy
allegedly
donations all over the place because they raised something like $100 million, and that was like 10 times the amount that the Barack Obama inauguration raised. And the Barack Obama inauguration had like Beyonce and Jay-Z and Aretha Franklin performing.
Yeah, they didn't do it for free.
And the Trump inauguration had like two marching bands and a Steely Dan cover band.
Who were the best paid Steely Dan cover band ever in the
they
history?
They must have been, because where else
I
would
love
tens
Steely
of
Dan.
Millions of dollars go?
Ricky, don't lose my number. So anyway, a lot of the matters. He probably said it. The matters that have come up in the Mueller investigation are going to pop up in these other probes and maybe answer some of the... There's lots of overlap.
Yes.
So it ain't over. Donald thinks it's over. Lots of Republicans are like, well, you know, it's done.
Not only does he think it's over, but Mueller is great.
Yeah, he's...
For the last 2 years, we've heard witch hunt. he's tried to fire Mueller.
Hoax.
He had to be talked down off the ledge from Don McGahn to fire Mueller. It's all fake news. It's all this. They're out to get me. And nope, Mueller's great. Did a great job. Good job, Mueller. You're the best. And it's like, what's the difference between a week ago and today? That, you know, now Mueller's this great guy who did a great job.
Total exoneration. That's, or is it? That's the difference, right?
But on top of it all, you have Trump is, first of all, they're fundraising off of this. Like almost immediately,
right away,
the fundraising emails went out.
Shipping the money.
And then the Trump campaign sent a note to TV networks with a list of people who should be blacklisted, including Adam Schiff, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Eric Swalwell, who's also been doing a lot of news making. He's a California congressman. John Brennan, former head of the CIA. Jerry Nadler, who's, I think, the head of the Judiciary Committee.
And yet no AOC or Bernie on that list.
Well, I mean, they're the ones not out there who are not talking. I mean, if it was an anti-Green New Deal list, yeah, they'd be at the top. But Kevin McCarthy, who's the minority leader in the House for the Republicans, said that Adam Schiff should resign as the chair of the Intelligence Committee. Devin Nunes.
It's 1952 all over again.
Devin
Are
Nunes.
You now, or have you ever been?
Right. Devin Nunes went to the White House to find out how he should handle a committee inquiry into one of the Donald Trump issues. He actually went to the White House to be told what to do. But yeah, let's fire Adam Schiff. Adam Schiff's the real problem. So, I mean, it's...
Deep logic there.
People have talked about him, Trump, I mean, overplaying his hand, how, you know, you go back to the Clinton investigation when he was, after impeachment was over, he basically forgot about it and went back to work and all that, and how this should be sort of be like what Trump's doing. It's like, you know, put it behind you, get down to whatever it is he does. But
that's it, right? I don't know what he did.
But no, he's taking victory lap after victory lap. And I can't help but wonder, is this going to blow up in his face? Because it's not over. Not only do we have all these investigations, but there's been no Mueller report delivered. Nobody has seen this other than Bob Mueller, who wrote it, and Rod Rosenstein and Bill Barr, who read it and then summarized a 2-year investigation in a 4-page memo. So
my guess is it'll be like Al Capone. It'll be the taxes. It'll be something like that that will trip him up.
Right.
Won't be money still, to Stormy Daniels.
There's
or
still trials
like that.
Ongoing. Mike Flynn has to be sentenced.
Yep.
Roger Stone has a trial coming up. So.
And we saw Cohen go down. Mr. Trump is a liar.
That's a, yeah.
So Cohen said, I'm quoting, I'm not. I don't want to indict my, or.
Speaking of going down, you know, we may be in the last days of the NDP government in Alberta. The election was called a couple of weeks ago. Alberta's going to polls, I think, on April the 16th. Tried to find some recent polling. I found a Main Street poll from last week that said the UCP is out front with 50.7%, NDP with 37.1%, and the Alberta Party with a 4.3%. So it's a two-party race.
Yeah.
But I think unless something really drastic happens, we're going to be talking about Premier Jason Kenney in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think the poll tracker said it's 99% the UCP will win the most seats. So.
Mm-hmm.
It's looking that way, even with all the stuff, let's call it, that's around.
the stuff. Yeah.
This is Alberta election, the stuff. Because it would seem most of the controversies seem to be around UCP candidates. Most recently on this past Monday, a candidate named Eva Kyriakos resigned. So this is during the election. She said she was tired of being bullied for her beliefs. And it's the usual something she said on social media was taken out of context. As we talked about a week or 2 weeks ago, what was her name? Kaylin Ford, same kind of thing.
Yeah.
She was the one talking about, oh, those poor white supremacist terrorists or something.
Well, yeah.
Hell no.
She was concerned about, like, whites being replaced, basically. Yeah. I mean, the difference there was that she wasn't doing it on social media. She was doing it on, like, a messaging app.
Hmm.
So it wasn't quite public.
It was a leak.
Somebody leaked it. Kyriakos... it's not that bad what she said, but it's still pretty bad. But, you know, she talked about children shouldn't be brainwashed into accepting alternative lifestyles. And she was, of course, referring to transgendered use of bathroom facilities.
Yeah. But she also, she shared an article that was titled, it was to do with Germany, rape fugees not welcome. You know, right. One of those salacious things the tabloids post, and
yeah,
that sounds like a UK headline, not a German one. But
it's a little anglicized.
Yeah,
dude.
I don't even think the Toronto Sun would go that far. But so yes, controversy for sure. Also, as we talked about previously, the kamikaze leadership campaign is looming in the background. I think the NDP are going to make a bit of hay about that.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that there, the UCP, you know, when anybody speaks in Ontario from the government, it says, for the people. The UCP one's identical font and color, but it says jobs, economy, pipeline. So, I mean, but it's the same.
Sums it up.
Yeah, pretty much. You talk about anybody about elections, doesn't matter what party, it's jobs and the economy. And they stuck pipeline on. And it's not as if Notley is anti-pipeline.
No, and that's been the long con of this, is that she's like some sort of hippie who's been trying to get rid of all the pipelines and open solar panels and windmills everywhere. And I think a lot of people have been sort of alienated by just how pro-pipeline she's been, to the point of overlooking a lot of the stuff she's done on the environment, like carbon taxes, or even just the general, like, social compact stuff she's done, like, you know, $15 minimum wage, the full day childcare project, which will be expanded in the unlikely event she wins. So, you know, she's been a very NDP governor, except for this one thing where she's been about pipelines.
Yeah, and presumably the pipeline will bring green things, because they certainly advertised the heck out of that. I think we talked about it before, how there was that ad on about, you know, with flowers and bees and stuff. But it was really
a lot of people riding bikes in that
pipeline
animation ad.
No oil spills. That doesn't happen. So, yeah, they're both vying for the pipeline vote, it would seem. And Kenny was Monday or Tuesday came out about, what was he talking about? Failed teaching fads like discovery learning. Does that sound familiar? I think there's a lot of overlap between the Ontario PCs campaigned on, but what the policies they come out with and what Kenny wants. I think Kenny might even tack further right if possible. There's also...
Well, Alberta's not Ontario.
No, so very true.
There's lots of room to the right.
But their whole approach is to just kind of keep blaming Ottawa for stuff, right? Stop the carbon tax.
Well, this is interesting, because a lot of the platform he's talked about is like it's more about sticking to Trudeau than it is to sticking it to Notley. Maybe that's because he feels like it's a fait accompli.
If it's in the bag,
So, you know, he's talking about things like having a referendum about equalization payments.
Ooh, exciting.
Like, where would that go, right? You know, would that end equalization payments? No, they would still have to do it. All you'd have is a referendum and spend all this money. Good conservative idea. Spend money on a referendum that's going to lead nowhere. Cool. He's talking about things like secession, how...
firewall approach, right? Alberta first.
Well, right.
Yeah, I haven't heard that yet. But
you know,
I mean,
he's talking about there's a real tension that runs through the hearts of many Albertans. How, you know, we love to spend their money from resource extraction that we get through equalization payments, but we want to tell Alberta how to do its business. And it's like, well, fair enough, but a lot of pipeline goes through areas that aren't in Alberta. And you know what? If you want us to respect your sovereignty, maybe you should respect the sovereignty of other provinces. Just putting that out there.
And the feds essentially bought one of the pipelines.
Yeah.
It's like a big $5-6 billion gift or whatever.
But part of this too is that...
They're going to say no if the feds go in and build it. They're going to be like, no, we don't want your pipeline. We want this pipeline.
Right. Part of this too, though, is that they also announced that they're going to go back to the 2014 Education Act revisions. And people are seeing this as a backdoor to Jason Kenney to attack his bugaboo gay-straight alliances.
Go back to the 1914 curriculum, right? There's no homosexuals in Alberta. We wouldn't allow it.
Well, I mean, and that's the kind of thing that nationwide would, or even in Ontario here, would sink a conservative bid, but in Alberta, maybe not. Because I looked at the 338 map, and when it's zoomed out and you're looking at the whole province, it's just blue.
And there's pockets in the urban centers,
Edmonton, Calgary, and then half of Lethbridge is orange or turning orange. The rest is straight blue.
There's a railway track set right between there. There's a river divide. So that always runs on the other side. But something unfortunate that happened this past week too was racist graffiti. Mm-hmm. One of the Alberta Party candidates, I believe her name is Joanne Gooey, in Calgary. Again, major urban center. You probably wouldn't expect that sort of thing.
Well, it's usually where you least suspect it.
Yeah. And what else was going on? There was like I don't know if you saw, there was a heckler going around with a bull ring after Rachel Notley.
Rachel Notley was door knocking. She was door knocking in her riding. I guess it was like kind of a media event because media was around, or maybe media was around just because she's like the premier. It could be, but this seems like one of those, like, look at me knocking on doors like a regular politician kind of deals. Fair enough. And there was this guy walking around behind her with a blowhorn going like, Rachel Notley's going to lose. Who wants to bet me $100?
And the neighbors are all like in their robes, shut up.
And the neighbors
are
like, you know what? You can have an opinion. Just put the megaphone down.
Yeah. And Big Whitey's got the anger, and he's going to go after
and
you.
And eventually they had to scrub the whole thing. But you know what? I find it's like, it's emblematic of what I think the primary problem of people with Rachel Notley is. And I think it's pretty obvious because this is province where it's pretty obvious they've had a hard time with female politicians.
The women folk, of power. Yeah.
And if this was, I don't know, like a random NDP dude, would this guy be out on his blowhorn? Because this really feel, this doesn't feel like political speech. It feels like harassment. I'm going to get that NDP lady. And that's what it feels like. It's so staged. It's so forced. And people can deny that it isn't about Rachel Notley being a woman,
oh,
but it's
good,
about her being a woman.
There's a good chunk of that for sure. And also the premier too, but
yeah.
Yeah, so it's we've got another couple of weeks, so we'll see.
Well, I do want to give, because you mentioned graffiti, and there was a sign defaced in Red Deer North. The NDP candidate had some of their had one of their signs defaced, and her UCP opponent Cole Kander donated $25 to replace the sign.
Really?
Yeah,
that's so very classy.
That's a classy touch.
Yeah,
I know it feels like we dumped on the UCP, so I didn't want to give that good news story because that is a classy touch.
But is that sort of, you know, paying because your kid broke the window kind of money?
I don't
want
to speculate.
I'm not going to redact it.
It could be. I mean, he did post.
It's a good move.
He posted the screenshot on Facebook, so it is part PR. I get it.
Yeah,
but it's smart PR because a lot of this. I mean, speaking as people observing this from three provinces over,
yeah,
it seems
and
pretty
a hell
toxic.
Of a lot of kilometers, yeah,
right. It's
like
it seems
country,
pretty
really.
Toxic because we talked about Kyriakos, but there was also Jeremy Wong, who was a reverend who was giving sermons submitting about how women should submit to their husbands. There was Tunde Askan, who put out a meme that said women should do two things for their men. Or give two things to their men, respect and sex. And
sorry, this is during the campaign or like previous to?
It's come out recently.
Not that it matters when it was.
And then
was
Grant
set.
Hunter, who, you know, talked about Aryan overtones.
Ooh.
So, you know, these are three UCP guys who are now out of the race, along with Eva Kyriakos and Ford. There's just a lot that's really desperately toxic here.
Yeah. Even though Kenny is saying zero tolerance. And he pretty much, when he was at the Harper Tories, he was kind of the guru of the of multiculturalism.
He was the guy reaching out to
the
immigrant communities.
Yeah. So he does have street cred there for sure. It's not as if, you know.
I think he has street cred in the greater GTA. I'm not sure for that particular portfolio.
Does it
I'm
translate
not sure he has that
Alberta.
Street cred in Alberta where he's been playing the.
Yeah, it's difficult.
The economic populist dude. In a cowboy hat.
Jobs, economy, pipeline. And that's all. You're not getting anything else.
And that's the way it is. we'll probably talk about the Alberta election again.
Undoubtedly. For sure, because something else is bound to happen.
But we will visit another popular recurring topic after this. You are listening to Open Sources here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
Song called Cosmic Banjo from an album called Moonfire. Cosmic Banjo, another open back banjo songs, the Banjo album. And that goes out to, let's send that out to our ex-colleagues, Jan Hall, who is from the Pro Banjo Camp, and Oliver Rockside, who is from the vehemently anti-banjo camp. That goes out to both of all y'all. I hope
let's
you're
just
doing
call
well.
It unappreciated banjo.
Yeah, okay. Toxic Banjo. No.
Toxic Banjo.
It's a nice, gentle album there. Yeah.
It was nice. I liked it, actually. Very laid back.
It was cosmic.
For our band called Moonfire. Cool. Now I hate it.
He's torn, man. Speaking of torn.
Oh, good segue. Yeah, so... awesome. way to murder the metaphor. So this Friday was supposed to be the last that the UK was supposed to be in the EU. However, since no one agrees on how to Brexit, the EU has offered an extension. And it is, as these things go, it's a two-pronged path kind of extension. On the one hand, if the agreement that Theresa May has been trying to pass for the last 2 months finally passes on the third try, the deadline will be extended to May 22nd. If not, the UK has until April the 12th to decide. An extra 2 weeks hardly seems like it's going to resolve anything.
No.
Especially since there will be no third vote on the deal that has not changed in the last 2 months since it was voted down in a historic vote. Again, we're recording this early, so who knows what might happen before the show goes to air. But on Wednesday, they are supposed to be voting on... It's open to Parliament. For the first time in a century, Parliament is setting the agenda, not the government, to have a series of votes to see if there's a non-binding agreement in how to Brexit.
Yeah, it's a really rare move, but it's due, I guess, because they really are stalled on this. It seems that it was, I guess, I think it was about 30 rebel conservative MPs. Rebel conservative. Things you think you'll never say on this show. The rebel conservatives went with everybody else virtually and decided that they're going to have a series of votes for Brexit options. So it's kind of like, I would describe it as testing the house because I believe these are non-binding, as was the Brexit referendum was non-binding. So several options on the table, and the idea is to get an inkling of what the house actually would lean towards. So the options are, of course, the deal that May put forward, the possibility of a second referendum, which seems to have... there was a poll done that said that about 80% of people said that the government had handled this really badly, and
7% said that the government had handled it well.
So
there's 12% confusion.
That's the hard the hard Brexit types, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I doubt it's the hard Brexit types because they want just the hard Brexit. They're ticked off that they're trying to get a softer Brexit.
And they're the ones that are after May's head. There was some like grumbling on the weekend about who's going to be the caretaker PM. And I think a lot of that is being driven by the Jacob Rees-Moggs and the Boris Johnsons of the gang. And they are a gang. What other deals are the no deal crash out is the one that will possibly happen. That seems to be the one that the EC is preparing for. Mm-hmm. They're just saying, okay, it looks like these UK can't make up their mind. There's been another idea floated on and off, and it's back on, is they're calling it Norway Plus, which sounds like some kind of meal replacement or something. I'm on the Norway Plus, which is a deal that they're not really members of the EU, but they're members of something called the EEA, which is a single market consisting of other European countries, Norway, Iceland, Liechtenstein, which we don't say too often on the show. And Switzerland. It's a bit of a special deal. So they're their own trade group, and they have a relationship with the EU.
It sounds like a Groupon, basically.
It's a Groupon.
It's a Groupon for the EU.
So this, in essence, would give them a chance to sort of be in the club, but not be in the club. And
to be of the club, but not in the club.
Would it fix the Irish question, which is one of the big ones? Possibly, but... Of course, the hard Brexiteer is the one saying, no, we want complete and utter.
Right.
And they're also the ones that want the hard border in Ireland, along with the DUP, Democratic Unionist Party, who are essentially propping up the government right now. So something else that might come of all of this is an election. The government may still fall. In fact, they may have already fallen as we speak 2 days before the government falling. We don't know. We're looking into the future.
Yeah.
And not unlike, I don't know if you heard this story, Uri Geller is back in the news, famous spoon bender, mm-hmm. saying that he's going to telepathically suggest to Theresa May that this should, we shouldn't have a Brexit. From his home in Tel Aviv.
That's literally not the craziest thing to come out of this.
Because, if it doesn't happen, then it'll be Spoonbender Geller.
It's literally not the craziest thing having to do with Brexit, which is truly bizarre.
But yes.
It's...
How many times do we have to talk about this? It's like...
Again, they're talking about... And Theresa May's aides actually brought in people like Boris Johnson and brought in like a lot of the hardliners and said, okay, what if we set a date for her to leave?
Yeah.
Would that get you to move on this? And of course, nothing comes out of it. This is like what happened with the U.S. Congress a couple of years ago when nobody wanted John Boehner. Everyone thought John Boehner had to go. And then it was a question of, okay, well, who's going to be the Speaker of the House now? I don't know. Not me. And then how about this person? No, he's too crazy conservative. How about this person? No, he's too center conservative. And eventually they agreed on Paul Ryan, begrudgingly. And I think this is the question. The only reason Theresa May has her job right now is because nobody wants the frickin' job.
No.
At least in the Conservative Party. Even the people who are so Brexit, like Boris Johnson. Even if, I guarantee you if they offered Nigel Farage, the Prime Minister's residence... to make him prime minister, to lead them into the glorious Brexit, he wouldn't. These guys don't want Brexit. They want to bitch about Brexit.
Yeah.
Because there's too much at stake. There's too much unknown about what's going to happen. And, this is the problem. And I think we predicted this back when Brexit was originally voted upon. The EU was a boogeyman. And once you defeat the boogeyman and the problems don't go away... What are you supposed to do? And I think that is what we are seeing come to pass. They thought the EU was the boogeyman. It turns out the EU is not the boogeyman. And then what happens when the thing you thought was the problem wasn't the problem?
I heard a really good joke, short one, that sums up everything.
Go on.
And it's a variation of a bit of a classic. It's an Englishman, a Scotsman, and an Irishman walk into a bar. The Englishman wants to leave, so everybody else has to.
Mm-hmm.
And that generally sums up what's going on here. Oh, well, let's not forget the Welsh. So, but it is almost as simple as that. So how do you stick handle, to use a Canadian aphorism, all of this stuff, right? They try again. Not only do they move the goalposts, but they kick the can down the road.
Right.
And they're still doing that. So
they said, in 2 years, we're going to leave. We're enacting Article 50 today. And then we're going to figure out how to do that, which is crazy.
But that's also one of the options, too, is that they could repeal Article 50.
They
could
say, okay,
we're not going to leave, and then we'll sort this out later, which they have been doing or trying to do.
And I just want to point out, meanwhile, at Whitehall, the Ministry of Defense has set up a bunker where they're just making plans for hard Brexit.
Yeah.
And they even gave it a name. It's Operation Redfall. Does that sound like you want the British Army to enact Operation Redfall from their secret bunker under Whitehall where they're planning for the worst?
Yeah, because I was in Churchill's bunker. They know how to do bunkers really well there.
I mean, at what point do you pull your head out of your ass? Is not to put this crudely, but really,
I mean, you didn't see my eyebrows rise right up into my hair. It's getting to that point.
Yeah, you have Ministry of Defense officials in a bunker planning Operation Redfall for when it all goes to pot. Meanwhile,
you can just see the guy with the clip mustache like, yeah, implement Operation Redfall immediately.
Yes.
Gary
Oldman in a fat suit is planning Operation Redfall.
Gary Oldman in the thin suit, right? Doing the, or with the big glasses on.
Yeah.
Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Brexit. I'll give an example of something else that's sort of limbo-y.
Yeah.
In limbo.
Yeah.
3 million EU citizens in the UK. they're going to be in this sort of space, depending on what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Only 200,000 have applied for this. They come up with this. They're calling it like a simplified settlement process. It's like, we want you to be part of the UK. Please become citizens. But, you know, various 200,000 is a lot of people, but as a fraction of 3 million, not as much. And everybody's like, well, what's going to happen? They had made some promises to certain communities. I believe the Polish community, there's something like 1 million Polish people.
Yeah.
In and around the UK.
Yeah.
They made some kind of promise, but it may not mean anything if they don't sort this out, right? If they don't, it's just potential chaos. I'm not surprised they're in the bunker mentality has happened because,
well, it's also actual chaos because you have 1 million people in, you know, downtown London saying, hey, we're showing up here because we're...
Oh, on the weekend.
On the weekend, yeah. You have over 4 million people signing the petition to stay. While there's also a Remain petition, which... or Leave petition, I should say. There's a Remain petition that's like almost 4.5 million signatories. You have a Leave petition that's like 375,000. And then on top of it all, this woman who started it, Margaret Georgiou, 77 years old, getting death threats.
Yes, and a lot of the MPs have been getting death threats as well. They're suggesting that they don't. I think a lot of them walk to work or so take the tube or something.
Yeah.
Corbyn is famous for being on the tube and getting his picture taken, but they're saying, yeah, you know, don't do that because, well, I mean, that's after the death of Joe Cox, assassinated essentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
With a homemade gun.
Mm-hmm.
Corbyn is, as opposition leader, chimed in as, you know, this is an embarrassment. It's been a debacle.
Well, it's not like he's presented too many alternatives.
Yeah,
either. He's been dining out on the conservatives eating each other.
The chaos.
And I think, but granted, he has a lot of issues of his own to overcome. But I think if you're like the prime minister in waiting, you should be offering alternatives and not just like poking the bear because you enjoy watching the bear like chew off its own arm.
And it's a heck of an assumption because he doesn't overall seem like the prime minister in waiting.
Right.
So he may not be, right?
Right. He's the ultimate sort of like protest candidate.
Mm-hmm. But it's still, and they may just go with them because there's no other option, but it's still in essence a hung parliament too. So there's that hanging over them as well in that it could fall at any time. The DUP could say, we're done.
Possible.
We're pulling our support, but I don't think they will because they got $1 billion worth of promises to back up this government, right?
Right, so. And the DUP also doesn't have any power unattached from the Conservative Party.
No,
they go back to being
very
fringe weirdos.
Very fringe weirdo minor party.
Right.
In my opinion, and yours, I believe, but in my opinion.
Well, I went to a bar, a salad bar. They asked me if I wanted Remain or Leaf. I said oregano.
Oh. That's two Brexity jokes.
Well, I didn't make that one.
Yeah, I didn't make the one I told either. Yeah.
That was from John Lovett on Pod Save America.
Well, hopefully we won't be joking in a couple of weeks.
I hope so.
I hope in a month we're not talking about it.
I would like to go to the UK one day, and I would like it to be there. speaking of places that you never know if they might be there, Israel.
They'll always be in England.
Cool. I really believe the authority and assuredness you brought to that. So Israel is having an election right now. It seems everybody's having an election. On April 9th, Benjamin Netanyahu's up for re-election. This despite the fact he is presently being indicted for various bribery and misconduct?
Fraud.
Yes, I got
breach of trust.
Breach of trust. That was the other one. So he goes to Washington and meets U.S. President Donald Trump, who he doesn't sign over the Golan Heights, but he basically endorses the fact that the Golan Heights, which has been disputed since the Six Days War, is well and truly part of the Israeli territories, much to the chagrin and consternation of the international community. Widely seen as a... way of actually election interfering. If Donald Trump hasn't got enough already, he's interfering with the Israeli election by giving his good friend Bibi a leg up.
Yeah, so people don't know the story. It's really contentious area. Six-Day War was in the late 60s, 1967. Mm-hmm. Then there was a replay in 1973, the Yom Kippur War. But officially in 1981, the Golan was annexed by Israel. Mm-hmm. And the UN and the rest of the world pretty much condemned this move. Who is it commented on it from the Canadian government? Chrystia Freeland said, of course, they were condemning the Hamas rocket attacks that had happened.
Happened Monday, almost timed to.
And yeah, it sounded like it was a stray. And then, of course, the reign of the back and forth.
Air raid on the Gaza Strip.
Forever. Yeah. Now, the Israelis usually do give Gaza a heads up. There's this weird sort of arrangement there. But anyway, so that led to Netanyahu going home early.
Mm-hmm.
But what else did Freeland say? Oh, she said, we absolutely do not recognize the fact that Israel thinks that the Golan is part of its country.
Mm-hmm.
There's that kind of looming. Syria has vowed to recover the area. It's one of those by any means necessary, and they're never, ever going to sign a peace deal because it's essentially theirs. 50-odd years has been a contentious area, as with that whole chunk of the Middle East, including Gaza and the West Bank.
Right.
So generally the way Israeli elections go is like, who can be the hardest on Hamas and all the other groups, whomever they're backed by. But yeah, he does have this looming, and his comment on it was that this is a left-wing witch hunt.
Fake news.
Been hanging with Donald a bit too long, maybe. But
to be fair, he sees it work for Donald Trump, and so why not? I think for Bibi Netanyahu too, Trump is a useful idiot because he's doing all these things. He's moving the embassy to Jerusalem, and he's recognizing the Israeli claim on the Golan Heights. Both things, Trump is technically correct when he says, like, well, it's been promised for a long time, it's just, you know, nobody's done it until now. It's like, well, fair enough, but there's perfectly legitimate reasons why these things have not been done.
Mm-hmm.
For all this time. And again, we have Donald Trump, the deal maker, giving stuff away, important stuff that is worth a lot in terms of political clout and consequence. And what does he get for it? He didn't get anything for Jerusalem, for, you know, moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. He didn't get anything, at least for him, or at least for the United States or for the international community, from recognizing the Israeli hold on the Golan Heights, except, you know, helping to secure Netanyahu's reelection.
Yeah, and it got weird, too. Netanyahu made some kind of joke when he was in Washington. He was like, I've got some fine wine from the Golan here, Donald. Can I give it to your staff? So he's kind of hinting at the charges that are hanging over his head, but also sliding in the fact that, you know, the Israelis would seem are making wine in the Golan Heights, or, I don't know, stealing it from somebody that's there. I don't know. Oh, well, sorry, and please don't send any accusations about us being anti-Semitic.
Oh, no,
please, thank you.
I recognize Israel's right to exist, but I also recognize our right to criticize Israel and Israel policy.
Because guaranteed somebody's going to send in some emails.
Right.
Anytime we touch on this.
I don't. what I don't appreciate, and this gets into some of the political stuff that's happening in the States right now. And part of that line, because, of course, Trump famously doesn't drink. So the wine comment to the staff, I think, of course, is a reference to the fact that I don't think Donald Trump cares a whit about Israel. He knows that, as has been mentioned, Trump is the Fox News grandpa given the presidency. What he knows is from Fox News is that they were talking for years about how Barack Obama, son of Satan, was not a fan of Israel, was not the great ally to Israel that he should have been, and he drank the Kool-Aid. So whatever Barack Obama did, mm-hmm, Trump is going to do the opposite. And of course, what did Barack Obama do in 2015? Cancel a visit from Netanyahu to Washington before the election, because that is standard U.S. policy, that, you know, the Americans don't muss around in the elections of other people, theoretically, mm-hmm, speaking. I recognize CIA issues and all that. But
indeed.
But here Trump's like, no, come on over and I'm going to give you stuff. And on top of it all, there's also the APEX summit happening this week, the American-Israeli Public Affairs Commission.
Yeah.
And Mike Pence was there speaking, talking about how Democrats are more anti-Semitic and it's an anti-Israel party.
Oh, boy.
Blah, 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 blah. And it's like, first of all, Mike Pence, you work for Donald Trump. Second of all, Mike Pence, you don't give a damn about Israel. You only give a damn about Israel being in the hands of the Jewish people, because that's the tip-off for you-know-who in the sky to come back as its end game. And by that, of course, I mean the end days and Jesus coming back, because the Jews have to have control of the Holy Land in order for Jesus to know it's time to come home, to come earth and, you know, bring us all skyward.
There is that weird dance in politics with the fundamental and quite literally fundamentalists who have this line of thought.
Yeah.
And that's why they place such importance on Israel, while at the same time, there can be a lot of people within that group, not necessarily politicians, that there's definite anti-Semitic overtones. It's this weird, you know, that whole Soros thing. Soros controls everything. And this is coming from the same people who's like, oh, Israel has to remain in the hands of the Jewish people. And it's like, but Soros is going there.
Right. There's that. There's a very cynical political play that I don't think gets called out enough. When you see somebody like Mike Pompeo, this is getting a bit too much into the American politics, but there's tremendous overlap. But
no USA, no Israel, right? Mm.
Mike Pompeo has a faith-based media only availability that they don't release a transcript
for. Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
And then he goes on, I think, CBN in his interview.
That's
by
the
them.
Big one. Yeah,
and
the Pat Robert Center says he's
don't
still...
you think that Donald Trump was sent by God to protect Israel? And Mike Pompeo says, "Well, absolutely, I believe he was." And it's like, no, he wasn't. What
Do
are
you
even talking
not
about?
Read your Bible?
No, they don't. But
just get them signed by Donald. Everything's fine. Yeah,
I still can't believe signed Bibles.
Yeah, and yet they're probably worth a lot of money. If you can get hold of one. That would be my only thing would be...
You know what? If we should happen to make it to the end of the Trump administration in relatively one piece, I imagine a Trump-signed Bible would make a great gag gift in like 5 years.
Well, I'll tell you, this is a total aside, but weird stuff. I was in...
It's the end of the show. It's a time for asides.
It's time for the aside. I was in Cleveland at this the restaurant near the ballpark where we were, and they get people to sign their rolls. And right at the front door, there was a roll under a glass case signed by Donald Trump with a Sharpie, and one below it signed by Mike Pence. And I thought, this isn't just the weirdest thing I've seen in America, but it very much represents America, right? Here, sign this bun, and we're going to put it under a glass
case. Okay, that was my question. It's like it was like a dinner roll. It wasn't like
a dinner roll, yeah, like you would, like a hoagie, let's say.
That's crazy.
Ain't that America, right? So
that's crazy.
I had a good laugh at the bun. But yeah, so signing things with a Sharpie with that sort of severe signature has nothing to do with Israel whatsoever. But yeah, the election's on the 9th. It sounds like it's what Battle of the Bennies as a retired general, Benjamin Gantz, with the blue and white, which happens to be the colors of the flag, political
what
alliance.
What a coincidence.
Yeah. But we should mention that Israel runs this PR system with a party list. Mm-hmm. So that's why there's 40 different parties, and like there'll be this party of three people who are like the kill all the Palestinians party, and they will prop up the government.
Well, there was the Jewish Power Party.
Kill Palestinians party is not real, by the way. But
barred from running candidates. It's a far right party, and the Israel Supreme Court barred it from.
Oh, so they're actually doing
So
there is a range of ideas, but a lot of them lean toward, you know, it's mostly right. They're passing off this ex-General Gantz as some kind of lefty, but, you know, not lefty in the concept of we think of it. He's left, I suppose, in the Israeli sense of things.
Right.
I mean, his job was to, you know, he was in the military.
Well, no one could get to the right of Netanyahu on certain aspects of national defense. So anyone who can't get to the right automatically is to the left. So, I mean, if you're looking at Getz and Netanyahu, you know Netanyahu's on the right. So Getz has to be on the left.
Yeah.
And I will be very curious to know, does the indictment charges, does like the accusations like
April 8th.
That Bezek.
Something like that, right?
Yeah, that Bezek, this telecommunications company whom the Netanyahu government made certain concessions for, you know, that allows them basically, you know, millions of dollars of extra revenue apparently in favor of, you know, giving Netanyahu some positive press. Like, is stuff like that going to carry any weight, or is this going to come down to national defense? Because there's also to borrow an Ontario expression, hallway medicine issues in Israel. The number of beds available per 1,000 is way down. They are having a real serious issue with keeping up with demand in their hospitals. And you know who's been health minister for the last 7 of 10 years?
Was
Netanyahu.
Oh, is it joint?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, I mean, that's really inside baseball.
Meat and potatoes issue, yeah, rather than, oh, those Palestinians.
Right.
Which is usually
the, so, I mean, there's a ton of stuff. And I think when, you know, when we look at from the outside looking in, you know, it tends to be about the Israel-Palestine thing. But, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on there. And it'd be interesting to see if that the accusations have any effect at all.
We'll put it on the list for a future date.
Yes.
And shalom.
Cool. You can stay connected to us on our website all week long, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire. You can also find us on Twitter at @OS_Guelph, and you can hear past episodes of the show on Open Sources Guelph at the Guelph Politicast channel. That's on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can find me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to GuelphPolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I never blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com. One of these days, there's so much going on. There really
brutal.
Is. Yeah.
Brutal.
Including Save the Station. Scotty's, we'll talk about that at a future
Scotty's working moment. On his book, his memoir.
Yes.
That plugs in where? That's the name of Scotty's memoir.
I'm stealing that.
DJ I'm Sounds Good to it. Me is here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll see you next week, Thursday at 5 p.m. for more open sources, and we'll peace out there.